From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour happens at every sector, every level of government, every level of business. And the question is about trust and how do you establish trust, whether you're in the public sector, the private sector, whether you're a CEO, a manager, an elected leader. The value of trust seems to have been, in some ways, forgotten at certain levels of government. Polls are as bad as they have ever been when it comes to public service sector, the public sector in this country, certainly for our government. And so we asked someone to come in from Washington, and Bill Benner came in from Washington to talk about what conscious capitalism is, what trust means, how to establish it, how to preserve it. And we've got a couple of guests here. Bill Benner is the president and founder of WW Consulting, based in Washington, D.C., and he's worked with government agencies, nonprofits, and financial and business institutions of all types to improve trust-based leadership. Bill, nice to have you here.
Thank you very much, Evan. It's great to be here.
Bob Whipple is here. He's known as the Trust Ambassador, which, Bob, that is a big title to fill out, but we know you're going to do that this hour. He's the CEO of LeaderGrow, Inc., and author of four books on the topic of trust, a founding member of the Rochester Chapter of Conscious Capitalism, and the chair of the Governance Committee on the Board of Directors of RABEF. That's the Rochester Area Business Ethics Foundation. Bob, thanks for being here.
Great to be here.
There's an event tomorrow morning at 7:30 at Irondequoit Country Club, and that is the real reason. Bill just didn't fly in for connections, which is a nice thought. But, Bob, what's going on tomorrow morning?
Well, RABEF and Conscious Capitalism of Rochester are joining forces to bring Bill in and to have a dialogue, a continuing dialogue, on the subject of ethics and trust in the public sector. We talk a lot about trust in the private sector and in business, but it's particularly important to bridge that over to the public sector, because things can get pretty wild pretty quickly if we don't have trust.
Well, and I think Bill has seen that in his time in Washington up close. Is this the worst it's ever been in terms of public trust?
You know, in terms of whether it's the worst or not, Evan, it's been pretty bad for quite a while now. And if you look at most survey data around the subject, you'll find that people will say we're at a low point. However, there's other data that's sort of encouraging, indicating that maybe, possibly, we're starting to turn the corner a little bit. I think what it ultimately turns out to be is that people are recognizing that we can no longer continue to operate in an environment, a political environment, where the trust, the distrust is so evident, so strong.
Is it? I know it's the lowest it's ever been. Has it ever been good? you've been there for most
well,
of your
I think,
life.
Well, I think it's a relative. You know, it's relative. I mean, in the D.C. area, you have to understand the politics being what it is. It's a national, you know, a national level, international level. There's a lot of power players in Washington. People that want things to go a particular way, their way. So sometimes they'll cut corners to be able to get the things they want. And they don't really bridge the gap between the aisles like in Congress. I mean, look at what's been happening over the past, you know, 3 to 4 years in particular, and the two parties are just totally entrenched against one another.
But Bill, you will hear people in the public sector say that the ends justify the means, that they believe in a cause or a value proposition, and if they have to cut corners to get there,
yeah,
the ends justify the means.
Well, I don't subscribe to that point of view. They may say that, the proverbial they, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I personally believe that what most Americans are looking for, most citizens are looking for, is for the political parties to come together more cooperatively, more collaboratively, for the benefit of the country as a whole. And I think that, yes, there are going to be strong opinions on one side or the other, but I believe it's the behaviors that our elected officials practice that make the difference. If they are actually trying to find solutions, better solutions, even despite the fact that they may have to play a particular party line, then they can do a lot of that behind the scenes, and a lot of that is going on behind the scenes, but it's not evident to the public. And I think sometimes, even with the way they're portrayed through the media, it tends to continue that divide.
All right, so Bill and Bob, I want you to explain to our listeners a little bit about what you actually do on a day-to-day basis. And Bill, let me start with you, with WW Consulting, based in D.C. Who are your clients, and how do you approach working with them?
My clients are federal government agencies, they're local government agencies, they are commercial enterprises, they're nonprofit organizations. And the work that I do with them, it's a variety of different services. It relates to leadership development, organizational trust, leadership team trust, personal development, self-awareness, executive coaching. So I cover a lot of different bases with respect to the work that I, the services that I provide for my clients.
Most of the time in government, people assume that the real object is winning. Whether you're a lobbyist seeking a means to an end, or you are an elected leader who wants to win an election or win a sort of legislative battle, that the objective is winning, and that talking about trust is nice, and it maybe it polls well, that people would like to trust, but in reality, winning is the object.
Well, winning for what purpose? That would be my question in return. Winning just to be able to espouse your position and to get things done the way you want, or winning for the benefit of the people in general, for the people that you represent. Okay, I'm now talking about the politicians, right? You know, it seems to me that there's a lot that takes place in the interactions between public officials, between private executives, and even within organizations, in terms of whether the employees feel engaged in the work that they're doing, whether they're getting a sense that there is real trust, that they can trust one another. Without trust, we really can't accomplish much. Trust is, from my point of view, is a foundational piece for any organization and for any community type of situation as well, whether it be political, whatever it might be. So I think that people are looking for that. They just don't quite know how to get to it.
Well, and this may be a softball. You can mention some of your own clients. I don't care. I just want you to tell me, is there anybody in Washington who's really earning trust, who's really sort of that the public feels good about, whether it's an agency, whether it's elected political leaders, and it doesn't matter the party?
Well, you know, without maybe mentioning names per se, I would say that there are a number of groups, there are a number of business groups in the Washington, D.C. area, similar to what we have here in Rochester, that recognize the importance of ethics, business ethics, engagement of employees, all of the things that we're addressing. And I think that what you'll see is the public wanting more of this, and the public becoming more engaged in these kinds of discussions. If we don't have these kinds of discussions publicly in an open forum, we probably are not doomed, but we're probably going to continue on the path that we've been following.
Which is cynicism, lack of trust, the public not feeling that government agencies or government leaders are actually working in their interests. And that, I don't know what the long-term outcome of that, but it cannot be good.
No, absolutely not good. And, you know, a question that I would raise in terms of every community across the country, you know, what is the prevailing mood with respect to trust and distrust within communities? Is it a mood of resentment? Is it a mood of resignation? Or are people looking to cooperate with one another and to come up with better solutions? And I think that's where it comes. It comes from each of our individual behaviors, what we practice each and every day. We can talk about it in a collective sense, and I think what happens when we talk about it collectively for a community or for the country as a whole is that things can get lost in the process. It comes down to each of our individual behaviors about how we engender trust with one another.
Before we get to the phones, I'll let our listeners know who have already started to call. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-TALK, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994, right here in Rochester. Bob, with Leader Grow, Inc.,
yep,
what are you doing on a daily basis?
Well, I work with organizations of all sizes and all types, and my focus is usually on helping to build higher trust. That's why I'm called the Trust Ambassador. But I do also leadership development in a broader sense. I do strategic work with organizations. So it's really a kind of a montage of things depending on what an organization needs. I'll go in and do an assessment, and generally there's a trust assessment that goes along with that as well. But I try to focus my energy mostly on helping to improve trust, because I believe that's the center point. If an organization gets that right, then all the other things in leadership tend to work. If they don't have good trust and the ability to maintain it, then it's a problem.
You can talk about an organizational, and we're talking really about the public sector this hour as we get ready for tomorrow morning's event at Irondequoit Country Club at 7:30, but in the private sector.
Right.
If a manager doesn't have the trust of their employees.
Right.
And unfortunately, that seems more common these days as well.
That's
again,
right.
Managers may think that having the respect is better than the trust, or the fear is better than the trust, Bob.
Well, respect is the word, not fear and not love. You know, a lot of leaders try to be loved, and that's a mistake. You have to get respect. I'd like to make sure we broaden and not just think of in the public sector, not just think of it as a government issue.
Yeah.
Because I believe it's any public service organization, particularly the law enforcement, for example, the military. Let's take law enforcement. We have an example right now in Ferguson, Missouri, of what happens when there's no trust between the citizens and the law enforcement. And all you have is a spark, a particular incident, and you've got months and months. Think how much that's costing, not only just in terms of the dollars, but the social damage that's being done. It's amazing.
Yeah, that is the stark and sad example. And, you know, before I get to the phones, if you're hanging there, stay right there. We're going to get to you in a moment. Bill, what do you, Bill and Bob, if you're going to Ferguson, how do you start to rebuild trust like that? Because it's one thing to start fresh and to build it. It's another when you've lost it.
Well, restoring trust is a very difficult thing. I think we've all experienced that. We all know that. You have to have parties that are willing to come to the table and to talk, right? You have to show a sincerity. You have to show that you truly care. You have to show that you have a competence around the issues at hand so that people feel that we can make something different here, something better, right?
And right now in Ferguson, the problem is there's no one listening. Everyone's shouting at each other. And as long as that's going on, you're really not going to be able to make much progress.
Okay, let's get to the phones. And as we do, Bob, tell our listeners again what's going on tomorrow morning.
At Irondequoit Country Club, which is out on East Avenue right next to Nazareth College, we're going to have an event with Bill Benner from 7:30 to 10 o'clock to talk about trust and ethics in the public sector.
All right, so 7:30 tomorrow, and if you want to go and sign up, do you need to do it in advance?
Yeah, and here's what you do. You go to Google and you type RABEF, the Rochester Alliance for... RABEF.
Business Ethics Foundation. There you go.
So Rochester Business Ethics Foundation, and go to the meetings, and you'll be able to sign up there.
Okay, very good. Let's get to the phones. This is Bob in Pittsford. Go ahead, Bob. Thanks for calling Connections.
Oh, is that me?
Yes, that's you, Bob. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I thought I was third in line, so I was a little surprised. Thank you for taking my call. I've worked, just as a quick background, I've worked in a major corporation for almost 20 years in marketing and communications, and I've worked as well and even headed up a nonprofit organization. I have nonprofit clients. Specifically around the public trust issue, I'd like to guess, if they would, to comment on the source of this mistrust in concrete ways. And here's what I'm thinking about. Having recently seen the Roosevelts on PBS, there was a time, certainly in World War II, and even before that, in the Depression, when people came to trust government to address their needs. I mean, real people, the majority of society. And that lasted for quite a while. In his election campaign, Ronald Reagan said, government is the problem. And since then, there's been a consistent marketing effort to prove that. The marketing effort comes from people who have the means and the goals in mind to benefit from what government does, whether it's contracts, whether it's policy, et cetera. And I wonder if the guests would speak then to how do you rebuild that kind of trust in the face of a consistent, I'll call it marketing campaign, from a variety of sources, but with the impact of people saying government is the problem, and the media's role in that as well, and about, quote, incompetence in government. So thanks very much.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks for the call. Very interesting questions. I'll start with Bill. Go ahead, Bill.
There are a couple of premises here, and I think we have to be careful about when we say government is the problem, government is the source of, you know, the distrust in our country. There are an awful lot of people that work in federal government, state government, local government, affiliated resources that these are very hardworking people, and these people are trustworthy. Most, I would say, the vast majority are. I think sometimes there are misplaced priorities. I think that sometimes leaders will, whether it's because of their ego or because of their party affiliation, whatever it may be, they will do and take actions that are not really in the best interest of the public at large. And so we've seen various situations. We've seen scandals with the VA. We've seen scandals with a variety of different agencies in the federal government. And it's a question of, why did they happen? You know, we have even in the IRS, right? So why do these things happen? Why do they continue to keep showing up? Why is it that they seem to be more evident? Maybe it's because, possibly, I don't know this for a fact, but maybe part of it is that these things are getting reported almost as soon as they happen or as quickly as they happen. There's a public interest in knowing. It's almost like it makes good news, you know, not good news, but it's bad news. But bad news sometimes can be good news.
Valuable news.
Valuable news. So it's, I think we have to be mindful of the premise that we're coming from. I don't necessarily subscribe to the fact that government is the problem. I do think that there are people in government who create the problems. And I think it's a major function of leadership. And are leaders truly trustworthy? Are they practicing behaviors? Are they doing the things that are necessary to, as I said earlier, to engender the trust with the public and within their own agencies?
Bob?
Well, I'm going to make a general statement that it covers government and also private industry and public organizations as well. Bob, my observation consistently is that if an organization is struggling with trust issues, it is primarily pointed at the fault of the behaviors of the leaders. You need to work to get them to understand that it is what they're doing that's causing the dry rot, if you will, the cancer. And you have to, that's where I go to work. Is I go to work at the very top level of an organization, because if you can't solve it there, then the organization doesn't get healthy.
I hope, Bob, that answers your question. Very interesting question on the premise of where trust is eroding and how it can be maybe brought back. Bonnie wants to talk about unions, for example. Hi, Bonnie.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I want to say something about that, but first, you know, obviously, as their guests are saying, you know, the issue of trust is extremely, it's easy to say, but it's extremely difficult to achieve. So some of the factors, I think, and these often require much more in-depth thinking and much more in-depth approaches, and that is, one of them is the whole issue of oppressions. So when, and some people just refer to it as diversity, I don't feel that's an adequate way of describing these things. So, you know, the oppression of women, the oppression of people of color, racism, plays a tremendous role. And most of the people in leadership positions are not very well equipped to deal with this, maybe just beyond the diversity piece. They're not able to deal with it in depth racism. I mean, the police actions are probably one of the strongest examples, but there are a lot of institutional examples. And until businesses and government see that, and education as well, and make that part of their primary addressing to educate people in the in-depth ways that needs to be done, it's going to be hard to develop a real trust. The other thing, and you know, I wanted to talk about just to mention is the issue of, well, in both private and public sectors, but the public sector is the one I'm most familiar with. I think people, when they talk about, we talk about this stuff and we talk about unions, I think most people just think of it as, well, all you want to do is get money and more salary and blah, blah, blah. Well, of course, people have to have a decent way of living, so that's part of it. But what people do not realize, I think, is how much having organized labor as part of the agreement with your employer allows people at the lowest level to balance the power. I mean, power is a key piece of all the trust issues. So you can talk all you want about, you know, having to have trust, but if people aren't equal, if they don't have some equal power, it's going to be almost impossible to achieve trust in a meaningful way. And what a lot of labor does, the union does, and these organizations and mental health and many other things, they will be vehicles to speak the truth to management when they start getting weak about, well, I want to please the governor, I want to please this board, and I want to please the consumers. So those are critical pieces, and I wish there would be more dialogue about the importance of that piece. That's how whistleblowers, you know, information often comes to the fore. there's just not enough discussion about the importance of that. We tend to want to get rid of unions and, you know, and let corporate interests take over. So those things are critical, I think, to this whole discussion. And I'd like to hear them articulated routinely in these kind of discussions.
All right, Bonnie, thanks for the call. Bill, let me start with you. Go ahead.
Yeah, Bob mentioned a moment ago about leadership being a fundamental aspect of all this and you know, sort of lead by example, and that'll follow through an organization and within a community. I think it's about an openness of every single individual, whatever their background, whatever, you know, their socio demographic upbringing, everything else. It's about getting to each person to think, how am I behaving? How am I behaving in terms of the trustworthy behaviors that I practice? And I don't care whether it's in an organization where you work. I don't care whether it's in relationships with your family or with friends. Whatever it may be, we're all interacting with one another. And so when we think about trust, there's an element of trust there. You know, there's a potential for distrust to occur. There's a violation of the trust. I think that in addition to what the caller is saying, I mean, there is an importance where people know that they have sort of an equal role, if you will, or equal opportunity for, if you want to call it power, but to interact with one another. I mean, too many times, groups will segment themselves purposely because that's their identity. If we could break down some of those barriers where we just remove those barriers so that people feel that they can talk to anyone and put these issues on the table. How many times have you been out and people talked about, do you trust me or do I trust you? Okay. Is that a typical dialogue? Probably not that often. But it's about understanding ourselves and about, you know, what are we doing again to bring about those trustworthy kinds of feelings with one another. And I think previous caller talked about at one point government was viewed as being very trustworthy. I think it's the politics sometimes that gets in the way of, you know, what we see it going on at the government level. And I just, again, I would say that, yes, we all have to feel an equality of opportunity to make a difference and to speak out accordingly, but to speak out in a way that is constructive, not damaging.
Bob, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I invented a word a while ago relative to union dynamic. The word is complify. I think unions complify the situation dramatically because what happens is if I agree with the premise that sometimes you have a situation that's so far off the mark that you need some protections. But as you add elements such as an ombudsman or that kind of thing or the union to try to police and force it to be right, it's sort of like the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. You can try to legislate rightness, but it's so much more efficient to do it right in the first place and to have leaders who really do care about people and know how to build trust from the ground up. Then you don't need that third party to complify the situation.
As in, what you're saying, Bob, is if you have to go there as employees and you don't trust the superior and you're feeling that divide, it's one thing, and it's going to be confrontational.
Mm-hmm.
But what Bonnie or others might say is that's not the fault of the workers if they feel that they literally cannot trust management, that they can't move the needle, that their voices aren't heard, and that, you know, I think what you're saying is ideally you wouldn't need to get in that confrontational nature of a union versus management, but Bonnie may say that's not the workers' fault. Isn't that the management's fault because they're not behaving in a way that's trustworthy?
That's absolutely right. It absolutely is true. We don't need to educate the workers, we need to educate the leaders.
And I know that's what Bob Whipple does, again, as CEO of LeaderGrow, and Bill Benner is here from WW Consulting based in Washington, D.C., as we talk about this event that's coming tomorrow morning, 7:30 at Irondequoit Country Club. They're going to be talking about trust and ethics in the public sector and how to improve them, and that's what Bill does. Let me get back to the phones. Jane Rochester, thanks for calling.
Yes, one big problem, I think, just with us human beings, is that we equate and value loyalty. We define it as you need to go along to get along, and if you dissent, then you're not loyal. And we saw that especially in the Bush administration. You know, loyalty was a primary value, and to dissent, especially in public, was just taboo. And we have had good people, so I have to put some of the responsibility for antisocial behaviors that we've witnessed on all of us voters or those of us who don't vote. For instance, and you can disagree if you want, of course, but I trust Ralph Nader. I trust Russ Feingold and Elizabeth Warren. I trusted and do trust Brooks Liborn. If you remember that wonderful documentary, The Warning, and she was basically bullied out, and she told those around her, like Larry Summers and Greenspan, about the derivatives problems and so forth. So we had knowledge, we had competence, we had integrity, and yet some of those people were bullied out, and we've paid the price. But you do have to, if you're going to be trustworthy in the end, like we trusted Martin King, you really have to have a heart-to-heart talk with yourself and have courage, be willing to stand alone if that's what it takes. And that's a hard thing to do, but sometimes it's absolutely necessary. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. And let's talk about the courage to stand alone, Bill.
I think, Jane, you expressed it as well as I could ever possibly express it. I do think it takes courage to, you know, to step up and to talk about things that you see that are not correct, that are not right, that you know that need to be addressed immediately. And I think there's something that we see in a lot of organizations. I've seen a lot of it. I know Bob has as well. And it's a term called it's called cordial hypocrisy. People are cordial to one another, yet they're hypocritical behind the person's back. They say things about them. This can be, you know, one-to-one kind of situations. It can be within organizations in general. And one question I would put out, posed to all those listening, is, you know, does cordial hypocrisy exist in the organizations where you work, in the communities that you reside, and you know, what are the qualities that are really important to feel that you can trust people, that you can trust the leaders? You know, Jane, you mentioned about Ralph Nader. Well, people, I think, felt that he was very open. He took risk. He said what was on his mind. He did it in a way that tried to inform the public of things that they needed to know, despite all the things that came at, you know, all the different parties that came after him. To diminish his cause and what he was saying, but he stood his ground, and I think that's a big part of what we have to do today. We have to stand our ground. If we see things, egregious errors or poor behaviors or unethical actions being taken, we need to do that, and that's not easy to do.
Well, and let me also say that I think we'll have a healthier public sector when trust isn't just defined within whatever party a person happens to belong to. And I can think of, for Jane, I would ask her if she trusts someone like Jeff Flake or Tom Coburn, who she may not agree with politically, but, you know, Tom Coburn and I think he's retired now, social conservative, very honest about his social conservatism, and very honest about his desire to see government shrink. And, you know, whether or not you agree with that, it's one thing to agree or disagree. It's another to say, is the person representing their own values honestly, as opposed to sort of perniciously trying to go about achieving what they want? We don't have to agree with somebody to trust them. Is that fair, Bill?
Exactly. That's our government is founded on the fact that, on the basis that we're going to have different opinions. And we try to find the best solution out of all those different opinions. So, yes, I couldn't agree more.
Well, and let me also ask, gentlemen, are we in an era, and this is a loaded question because I have a view on this, do we penalize when our leaders in the public sector are wrong more than we penalize dishonesty? You know, I think we're at a point where the desire among our leaders is to always be able to say that you are right and never admit fault, because there's such a penalty for having to look back and say, I got this wrong. And so you rarely see it. And yes, I understand a lot of people feel George W. Bush was sort of the one who that was his stock in trade, was never move, never budge, never change direction. Our current president is I'm not going to compare him to any other president, but he would pay a penalty for saying he's wrong about things. And I think that's the fault of the media, but the voting public too, that we penalize when somebody's wrong. If they say, hey, I thought we had this, we were wrong, we're gonna learn from this mistake and we're gonna improve, more than if they're caught lying, because we sort of cynically just assume they're all lying. And I have a real issue with that.
I've noticed a couple of times it really caught my attention when Obama would say, I screwed up. I don't generally hear presidents saying that. Mm-hmm. And so it really made a dent in my cranium. I wanted to mention to Jane that the idea of going along to getting along, the idea, I think, is that if leaders understand how powerful it is when they can listen to people who are telling them things that they don't necessarily want to hear. It's the whistleblower. It's the person that's saying, is that really the ethical? Is that really the right thing to be doing here? And what I teach is that when leaders can learn how powerful it is to be able to reinforce people when they're candid about their feelings rather than punish them, that opens the door for building trust. That is the most quickest way to build trust in an organization. I call it reinforcing candor. And the leaders can learn how to do that. It changes the environment rather quickly.
Yeah, I also think that for many leaders, they're afraid to say that they were wrong, right? They're afraid to admit that they made a mistake. But if they made a mistake on the basis of not having all the facts or maybe not interpreting the facts correctly, I mean, I think most people can look at that and say, you know, we're human beings. We're going to make mistakes along the way, whether it's at that level or whether it's our own daily, you know, life level, if you will. So I think there needs to be an acceptance to a certain degree that some of these things are going to happen. But dishonesty has no place whatsoever, from my point of view, in the whole notion of trust. If people are going to be dishonest, they're going to be dishonest. Now, there may be shades of gray with that, obviously. And people may feel I think it was to Jane's point about the loyalty. I have to be loyal. If I'm going to be loyal to this party or loyal to this person or whatever, I'm going to have to sort of go along with the program, right? Again, I think it goes back to our own personal integrity. How are we demonstrating our own personal integrity? And what's the courage that we're displaying to bring it to the forefront and to address it?
If you're on the phone waiting, we're coming to you after this very short break. I am way late for a break, and John Andrus, our wonderful engineer, has been so polite about not coming through the glass and telling me to get to break. Let's take a very short break. If you're on the phone, we're coming to you next as we talk about improving trust and ethics in the public sector. It's Conscious Capitalism, combining with RABEF, the Rochester Area Business Ethics Foundation, an event tomorrow morning at Irondequoit Country Club that starts at 7:30. I know they'd love to see you there, and you can register online with RABEF, but we can continue the conversation on the phones next on member-supported public radio. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, we explore the Whiteness Project, a project asking us to think about our race and how it impacts our daily lives. Then we talk to Todd Baxter, head of the Veterans Outreach Center, as we look at Veterans Day coming up. We're talking about the plight of homeless veterans especially and what we can do to help. It's coming up Thursday on Connections.
The WXXI Travel Club is going to Portugal in May for a 2-week excursion. I'm Jean Fisher, and I'd like to invite you to join me as we explore ancient castles, Roman ruins, whitewashed villages, wineries, and fine dining in this fascinating country. To learn more about this amazing trip, please call 258-0309 or visit WXXI.org.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Bill Benner is here from Washington, D.C. He is the president and founder of WW Consulting. He works with government agencies, nonprofits, financial and business institutions of all types to improve trust-based leadership. Bob Whipple is known as the Trust Ambassador. He's the CEO of LeaderGrow, Inc., and on the board of directors here at the Rochester Area Business Ethics Foundation, and they are teaming up for this event tomorrow. We go back to the phones now, and this is Gary in Greece. Thanks, Gary. You're on.
Thanks, Evan. Another great show. You know, this whole conversation, I have so many questions, so I'm going to just try to keep it to two quick comments and one question. One, I wonder, you sometimes when we talk about the trust and public officials lying, is how often opposing parties will say, you know, really interpret a different perspective as lying, that it's not necessarily clear that someone is lying, it's that they just have a different perspective. In regards to flip-flopping, you know, we remember what John Maynard Keynes once said when he was asked about changes in his economic policies during the New Deal, and he said about flip-flopping, you know, when the facts change, I change my mind. What do you do? But the real question I have is this: is how much of this do you think money plays in politics? We all know that it's so influential, it's so negative. And how many times, you know, we deal with people in politics that are afraid to say something or be honest because they're simply afraid of losing funding? Thank you.
Thanks, Gary. Appreciate the call. Bill?
Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, people are making at those levels are making decisions that, you know, they were trying to protect themselves. But I think in the process, if they're not being truly honest with themselves, there's a greater price to pay. And that's the price personally within themselves, knowing that maybe they violated their own sense of integrity, their own sense of self-trust. And I do think that that's something that we maybe don't talk a whole lot about. We talk about trust in organizations. We talk about trust with leaders. But what about how well do we trust ourselves, even on minor things? And Bob wrote a recent article on this based on some conversations that we'd had previously. And it's like, if you go to a very, very micro kind of example, if you go to buy something in a store and you get more money back than you're supposed to get back, and maybe you don't realize it right at that moment, but you walk out the store and you say, oh my gosh, I got more than I was supposed to. Do you go back and give them the difference? Right? You know, I had an example where recently I was at a printing supply kind of store, and I had faxed something off. And I was doing a lot of other things, and in the process, I forgot that I hadn't paid for it. Well, guess what I did? And I'm not talking just about me. I'm not trying to highlight myself. But just as an example, you know, I went back the next day because I realized I hadn't covered that, and I told them. And they didn't have it on their records anywhere at that point. But we still, you know, I still gave them, you know, the amount that was appropriate for what, you know, the service that I'd provide that I had received. So it's about that personal integrity. I think it really goes to the heart of a lot of it.
And I think that that you know we all are going to be guilty of something sometime. We're all going to make compromises into our integrity or to what's right. And what I think is the important thing is that we learn from these things. We grow. If we make a compromise, we bring ourselves to say, hey, wait a minute, that's not the way I want to be, and I can change that. And when we do that and we resolve that I'm not ever going to do that kind of thing again because it doesn't make me feel good. It may cost me a little bit more money sometime or you know, whatever it is, but to do the right thing and then feel great about that is a wonderful feeling.
Well, and let me extend Gary's question. And again, if you're on the phone, I know there's a lot of people on the phone. We are going to get to all of the calls. Let me just extend Gary's question in one significant way here. It's election season. We all love coming home to a pile of mail because it's nice to have to not have to use firewood. I live in a Senate district that's very competitive. And here's what I know about the candidates in my district. One of them wants children to be abused, and the other wants women to be held back into the dark ages.
Right.
Neither is true.
Yeah, right.
Right.
And to Gary's question, there's a lot of money trying to convince people that that's true, and it's hard to trace where that money is coming from. So when you don't have to be accountable, mm-hmm. it's easier to be dishonest, isn't it?
Maybe easier, but I mean, you know, accountability is something that we all need to take to heart, right? And, you know, when I see with the political campaigns and you see these kinds of outlandish statements being made about the other candidate, the American people, the electorate, you know, they understand that, I think deep down, that that's not real, that's not true. This is not true reporting. This is false reporting. It's trying to sensationalize against another candidate to benefit yourself. And I think that we need, as citizens, I think we need to do a better job, frankly, of understanding where the candidates actually are. So much is a 2-minute or less soundbite about what they see on TV, which is done right at the very end of before the campaign is over, before the election starts, before there's the election, and there's this big brush, and then people's decisions are made that way. We need to be a more informed electorate, I think. I think that's a big part of it, too.
Well, and Bill, and I think a lot of our conversation this hour and a lot of what our listeners want to talk about is an elected political leaders. I know Bill deals in many layers of the public sector, but I understand it's election season, so people are right. It's top of mind right now. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong to think that if I were running for the state Senate, no matter my political party, am I wrong to think it would be effective for me to do an ad where I sit at the camera and I say, my opponent, Joe Blow is my opponent, and you know what? Don't believe that he hates women or hates children. I actually think he's a pretty good guy. We happen to disagree substantively and very seriously. But he's a good person. He's doing what he thinks is right. I wish he's exercising his constitutional right to be wrong, and that's why I don't want you to vote for him. But is he a good guy? He sure is. And I don't think that it's fair to tar him this way. I actually think people would say, well, that's a trustworthy approach. But nobody does that.
How refreshing, and why exactly. Don't we?
But why exactly. Don't we?
Yeah.
I mean, when you advise people, people would probably tell you, no, that's crazy. That will never
win. It's not crazy.
It's not crazy. I mean, I think that we need more of that. That's what we need to see happening. That's what we need to see. And I think that because there's so much money involved, so much power involved, it gets jaded to that extreme, and that's the unfortunate part about our political system right now.
The event's tomorrow morning at 7:30 at Irondequoit Country Club. Bill and Bob and many more will be there, and you can join as well. If you just Google Ray Beff and sign up online, you can join the conversation tomorrow, 7:30 to 10. I think the goal is to get you back to work if you need to before they've barely even missed you.
That's right.
Let me grab Stephanie in the city of Rochester. Stephanie, thanks for calling Connections.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Boy, this conversation is going all over the place.
I know.
I'm glad you brought up politics again, because earlier one of your speakers talked about, if there's a trust issue, you have to, quote, look at the leaders, and it starts at the top. But, in Albany or in Washington, wherever, it's an ever-changing cast of characters. And I think there's something to be said for what an earlier caller said about the constant campaign that there is basically against government and the constant campaign of would-be officials against those in office just by virtue of the fact that they're in office. They suddenly become bad. And I think it prevents people from looking at what a public official is actually trying to do, how they voted, and assessing them based on that, as opposed to, well, he must be bad because he's a public official, he or she. So I think the trust issue with government is bigger than just what public officials do or how they behave, and certainly some don't behave well, but many do. And to just sort of paint with a broad brush and say, well, they've all got a problem, and they are the source of the lack of trust, when they are, in fact, embattled. And, some of your competing radio stations, the talk on those stations is just consistent about how awful government is and anyone in government. And they're supposedly all in it together and all bad, and I think there is a media campaign that is anti-government, and I think it's going to be very tough for public officials to achieve any trust as long as that continues. And that wasn't the case during World War II. It wasn't the case during the Depression. People sort of hung together a whole lot better than they do now, and I think the media was much more responsible about being constructive unfortunately, we all, you know, we all love to look at an accident on the highway. We all look like to look at something terrible and sensational. But I think the media really could be much more constructive in their reporting.
Stephanie, thanks for the call. I appreciate that. Bill Benner, when you work with people in government, again, not even elected leaders, do they feel stigmatized right now?
To a certain degree, they do. But let me say to Stephanie's point also that there are some really great people that work in government. I mean, these are very hardworking people. That this the sort of the notion or stigma that government employees don't work hard, that they're not productive, all of that. You know, my experience has been, yeah, there's some, just like in any industry, any business, whatever. But these are people that are committed to the mission of their agencies. These are people that really care about what they're doing. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there. And I think that they feel encumbered many times because maybe the whether it's a factor of leadership, whether it's coming from Capitol Hill, you have legislative affairs groups for different federal agencies that are just constantly pounded by Congress on various questions. There are even questions come at them from left and right and from every direction just to test whether or not the agency is going to respond the same way to the question. Mm. Coming from different, you know, political figures. So we've got to find a better way to break through that sort of that morass because that's out there. And so they feel put upon many times. Yet they still do their jobs, they still do it well as they possibly can. And they in those situations, they need the support of their own senior leadership. And sometimes for that senior leadership to push back when an agency is being hit pretty heavily. In the news, they need to push back and say, wait a minute, this is the real truth. This is really what's happening here, okay? And we're going to lay it out, and we're going to show you the facts around that. So I think it is a bigger issue, Stephanie.
Okay, back to the phones. We're going to keep going. John in the city of Rochester. Thanks, John. Go ahead.
Hey, Evan. Some of your earlier callers said it right. The real problem is the workers, in the case of the union, and the voters, in the case of electing leaders of our government, we're not informed, and we don't get ourselves informed enough, and that's a huge problem. And I just wanted to add another thing. I really think that there's a lot of talk about the Congress's approval ratings way down, which it is. But I'll tell you, Ron, I got to tell you, I'm just happy that the Republicans are fighting the way they are against the current administration, and also and I'm not a Republican, but also in New York State, and I actually think the leaders in Congress, Boehner and McConnell, I don't think they're putting up enough of a fight. I think there should be more controversy and more pushback. I think they're too easy, and that's a huge problem. In my opinion, what are your thoughts?
Well, go ahead. Thanks, John. Go ahead, Bill. that's more of a political question, I think.
Yeah, it is. Depending upon which party or points of view you have, I would say that yes, you have to stand up for what you believe in, and you have to state that very clearly. Right. At the same time, you're in a position if you're on the Hill, where you have to reach compromise. You have to reach some resolution. Otherwise, it's gridlock. Nothing gets done. And I think that's what the American public has been so upset about, is that the parties need to find a way to be able to come to some good solutions and compromise accordingly. They're always going to be, as we talked about earlier, we can agree to disagree, but ultimately there has to be some kind of action taken. The action taken right now is nothing gets done. And I don't mean to paint that in such a total picture that way. Things are obviously getting done, but it's... But it's a fine line. It's a balance between the two, speaking your opinion and then trying to do everything you can to reach reasonable and hopefully a productive compromise.
All right, you're getting a sense for some of the many topics they're going to be discussing tomorrow morning at Irondequoit Country Club. Bill Benner in from Washington, Bob Whipple here. Let me get one more call in. Stephen, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Thanks, Evan. It's real simple for me. We need a constitutional convention. We need to outlaw advertising for political advertising, and we need to set aside time on your station for intelligent conversation and debate. And that would change a lot of things. Money runs this country. I could be a moron And if somebody believes in me, they could put my name Smith all over the place on billboards and lawn signs and radio and TV. And that's how morons get elected. And unfortunately, I think there's too many morons in power. And this way, we could have intelligent people talk on WXXI.
Well, Stephen, let me first tell you, without weighing in on the substantive portion of that, we have done our best to really attract as many candidates for office as we can in an extended format. This Friday at 1 p.m., you're going to hear candidate-free airtime, 2 minutes apiece. They came in and recorded their own, and we always offer that to them. But we do appreciate the extended format. And the long format conversation. I will kick it over to Bill and Bob to close the hour by responding to some of Stephen's ideas. Bob, what do you think?
Well, I just think that it's true that our society has become so jaded, and it's so discouraging at times. And I think back to advice that my mentor gave me years and years ago, and that is that he said, you know, I used to like to complain about the politics a lot, but then I realized that the price of admission for complaining about politics is I have to dig in and do something about it.
Oh boy, he's laying down. Bill and Bob will be happy to hear that I spoke to a fifth grade class earlier this month, and we talked about the future of media, the possibilities of taking some of your passions and actually turning that into tangible ideas and fun things that they could do. But I told them, even now, before you're in fifth grade, I said, you're not going to figure out your career tomorrow. But no matter what you do, the most important thing that you can do is be an honest person, because it is very hard to change the reputation of dishonesty. And I said, everybody in this room, I'm sure you can think, if I ask you, do you know somebody you don't trust, somebody who's dishonest? And they all of a sudden they all started raising their hands. I said, don't tell me the names. But it's sad, but because it's very easy to think of that. And it's important to preserve that reputation as ardently and as strongly as you can. Bill Benner and Bob Whipple have made that the core of what they're going to talk about tomorrow at 7:30 in public sector. But come back and we'll talk about the private sector. We'll talk about all kinds of other sectors. And Bill, nice of you to fly in for Connections, but maybe we'll grab you on the phone sometime as well from Washington.
That would be fantastic. I'd love to do so. It's been great being here with you on the program.
Thank you for being here. We'll see you tomorrow morning at Irondequoit Country Club. Bob, I see you all the time. I'm sure I'll see you again soon as well.
Always fun, Evan.
John Andrus, thank you for your work as an engineer. I'm Evan Dawson, and this is Connections on member-supported public radio.